Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Hello, everybody. I'm really excited about the show today with these two exceptional women. My guests today are Dr. Adara Landry and Dr. Risa E. Lewis. Both of these women are emergency medicine physicians, and they've written this exceptional book called Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you
so much for having us.
My pleasure. And let's just get started. Let's start off getting to know each other. And I know that when we have three phones going, I know that sometimes there may be interruptions. I can guarantee you I will probably interrupt more than once. And that's totally fine. May I have your permission to call you by your first names?
You do.
Okay,
absolutely.
Perfect. Excellent. So, Adara, let's start with you. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about your background and yourself?
Of course. Well, first, thank you so much for having us. We're really excited to be speaking with you today. I am an emergency medicine doctor at the Brigham and Women's Hospital. And an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. I've been here for about 9 years. I'm actually from California, raised there up through medical school, I guess. Went to Berkeley for college, was pre-med, and did all of that sort of competitive sciencey stuff, and then went to medical school at UCLA and residency at NYU. And loved the East Coast. And because of my husband's occupation, I sort of ended up just moving to Boston and have stayed here. Mm-hmm. I have three kids, and, you know, when I'm not taking care of the kids, I'm doing a lot of academic work, writing, lecturing, helping students develop their careers, you know, early career professionals. And then I have a nonprofit that is focused on teaching people of color how to write for free. That's called Writing in Color. And when I'm not doing that, I do a lot of gardening. I love gardening, and I'm enjoying this warm weather we finally have in Boston.
Well, how nice. At some point, I do have return guests, and nonprofits is very near and dear to my heart. And so maybe down the road from now, you and I can visit again and talk specifically about your nonprofit, because I am such a believer in what nonprofit work means. And happy to hear the sun is shining for you in Boston today. Here in Los Angeles, not so much. Okay, so Risa, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much, and I'll echo that it's just a delight to be on your program live today. So thanks for this invitation for us. To the listeners, my name is Risa Lewis. Middle initials E, so sometimes I say Risa E. Lewis. I'm a professor of emergency medicine calling in from Philadelphia. By means of background, I gave a TEDMED talk in 2014, and I tie that in as relevant because within emergency medicine, my expertise and education focus had been the use of ultrasound at the bedside. I've also been involved with equity. I was asked to be a Time's Up Healthcare founder. And as I've been progressing in my professional journey, I am very interested in healthcare design and in podcasting. So in college, I studied at Brown University. I attended med school at the University of Pennsylvania. I did do a year of research at the NIH and confirmed that I wasn't going to be a bedside researcher and not a laboratory person. And then I completed my emergency medicine residency in Boston at the Harvard Emergency Medicine Residency. I started writing academic papers first, and then during the pandemic with Adara, I started publishing and writing more for mainstream outlets such as Fast Company, Harvard Business Review, Slate, Nature. And together we really want to help people do better, be better, and belong better and feel like they belong in the workplace. And just a final sentence about the podcast, it's called The Visible Voices.
Yeah.
And these are interview-style conversations covering healthcare and equity and other current event type of topics.
How would people listen to your podcast? How would they just Google The Visible Voices?
Yeah, so I'm on all the major listening outlets such as Apple,
like
Google,
me.
Spotify. Mm-hmm. And there is a website, thevisiblevoicespodcast.com.
Okay, perfect. Well, I'm as a fellow podcaster, welcome to the club. How long have you been doing that?
Since 2020.
Okay, well, you got I got a few years on you because it's really so enjoyable to speak with other people about their life experiences, which is why I love doing this every week. You know, all of my guests bring their own expertise to the table, and that's no different from either of you. So it's always just a pleasure, you know, to just have this conversation each week. So I'm a definition person. I don't like to make assumptions that people know what things mean, because maybe they don't, and they're just embarrassed perhaps to ask. So let's start with you, Adair. What would be the definition of micro skills? How do you define that?
We define it as similar to what it sounds like, small fundamental building blocks that build upon each other so that you are able to achieve a larger goal. And we really wanted to work with this idea of teaching the reader small steps, similar to what you just said about assumptions. We didn't really want to assume
mm-hmm.
the reader knew how to make large leaps and bounds to, you know, achieve this lofty,
mm-hmm.
vague, ambitious goal, right, such as, like, be better at work. We wanted to make it very instructional, prescriptive, detailed, and so we felt that breaking down very common goals that many of us have, right, like being better at mm-hmm. self-care, learning the
mm-hmm.
culture of your work, navigating conflict, becoming a subject matter expert. Like, all of those are very standard, normal, typical goals that we have, and yet many of us don't know how to get there. And so we wanted to write a book that really felt like it was concrete, actionable guidance that really,
mm-hmm.
you know, this idea of micro skills being like small, traceable, measurable steps that you can take to get to these larger goals that might be challenging for someone to figure out if no one's told them explicitly how to get there.
Right. I almost feel like this should be a class that's offered probably, maybe not in elementary school, but maybe by middle school, certainly high school, where in a class, this just seems like you had mentioned fundamental. This can serve you regardless if you're in the workplace, if you're a physician, if you're a stay-at-home mom, a stay-at-home dad. It's still applicable, and I think that's what makes it so interesting. And Risa, I'd like to know, what is your approach to teaching these skills?
Thank you for that question. And I'll start by saying that many people who have read the book have initially been like, oh, another one of these business self-help books, or,
mm-hmm.
oh, you know, I don't usually read these books, but it's Adair and Risa, so okay, I'll read it. And the response has been quite positive. And one of our physician educator mentors, friends, colleagues said that she could really tell that this was written by educators. So when people see this book, they don't typically see authors that are physicians writing business self-help books. And
right.
the stories in the book are very much our stories and many of our experiences in the emergency department as emergency medicine physicians. However, we've both done dedicated time and learning. Adair has a master's degree in education. And I'll say also, ultrasound, when teaching ultrasound at the bedside, it's very much required that you break things down into small steps. And this concept of breaking large goals, large projects, habits, character traits into small pieces is not new. If listeners think about learning how to tie your shoe, or one of the examples we give medically is if someone comes in and they're in cardiac arrest, their heart has stopped pumping, that to run a code, which people have seen probably depicted on film or in TV shows, there are many steps and there are many people performing many small steps that all together comprise running a code. So a lot of what we do in the emergency department is just-in-time learning. This book is written very similarly. It's a just-in-time learning guide. Sure, you can definitely read it cover to cover. In fact, we had friends post on Twitter recently that they read it cover to cover over the weekend. And at the same time, it's like a toolkit. And the table of contents is so detailed that you can actually flip directly to a page where you think you need to just in time learn something like running a meeting, having a difficult conversation, et cetera.
You know, it's one of those books where you just want to have a highlighter, you know, where you just, or you want a little post-it note that sticks out to remind you, I want to go back and look at that one more time because that really made sense to me. So I think that it's well written. It's well written for the everyday reader, and I think that that's also what makes it so so appealing. When we think about this, Adara, what micro skills have made the biggest difference in your professional life?
You know, it's a great discussion that we're having so far, and I say we get this question a lot. And it really depends on what's going on in our personal lives at the time or professional lives at the time, because I have given various answers over the last few months to this exact question.
Totally
depends.
Well, what's it for you? How do you feel in today?
Well, I think probably still no matter what, the biggest thing that I've done is that has helped my career is pausing before I say yes to something. I was totally one of those folks who, you know, just even a few years ago would say yes to anything that came my way. I felt like I was, you know, expected to say yes. It was sort of a cultural practice that I subscribed to. And so if someone came to me with an opportunity, more often than not, if not almost exclusively, I would say yes. I would find a way to make it work and add it onto my to-do list. And that led to feeling, you know, overwhelmed, behind, whatever word you want to use. I needed to make a change. And so I learned through mentorship, through reading, through trial and error myself that I need to really take some time before I say yes to things. And what that really looks like is, you know, hearing someone out who's coming to you with an opportunity, perhaps asking some questions, you know, some probing questions like, when is this due? Who am I working with? Is there funding? Has anyone on our team done this before? Right? Just like trying to understand if this is really the right fit for you. I mean, you can even ask questions like, will this actually help me get promoted? Or will this change my salary? Like those are questions you're going to find out the answers to anyway. And so asking those up front, we want to normalize. And then, you know, after you do that, going home, talking to your team of mentors, coaches, family, and sort of saying, like, this is an opportunity that's come my way. What do you think? And the reason why I personally like to do that is because every once in a while I find some perspective or insight that I have yet to consider, and I can go back to whoever's pitching me the opportunity, or maybe it's even just like an email that came my way, and say, you know what, this actually isn't right for me. Or might ask a follow-up question, you know, just like having insight. But the idea is really, you know, not impulsively saying yes and to just doing some research and running it through people and asking questions so that you can make well-informed decisions about what it is coming your way and if it's a good fit for you or not.
You know, I want to piggyback on what you just said because I am going to ask you, Risa, the same question. But you instantly made me think of something. and this was many, many years ago. My father was very, very ill, and was, you know, he was in the time of his life where he was going to be passing. He was in the hospital. My mother had already passed. I'm the oldest. I have a brother. And I had plans to go somewhere, like Palm Springs or something. And I didn't know what to do. I thought, oh, my God, what if I go somewhere and he dies and now I didn't do what I was supposed to do? So I talked to the doctor about this. And this piece of advice is something that I apply to myself regularly, which is make the decision in your mind that you're going to do X, Y, Z. Sleep on it overnight. Wake up in the morning and decide, was that a good decision or no, that was not a good decision. And then you take that information and you decide what you're going to do, as opposed to being reactionary, which so many of us are. You use the word pausing. It's another way of doing that. But I just thought that information from that doctor, I'm talking about, you know, this was a gazillion years ago. This was 1993 or something like that. So I've applied that to myself sometimes when I make a difficult decision and not quite sure what to do. And I just thought I would share that part with you regarding that. But Risa, back to you. I'd like to know what has these micro skills, how have they made a difference in your professional life?
You know, this is a very comprehensive book, and so almost every single one of them has made a difference. And similar to Adara's experience, some rise to the top given certain circumstances, certain days, and some sort of fall to the bottom depending on sort of what the call to action is. What I'll say is dovetailing off of what Adara just shared, very much there's this concept of FOMO and JOMO. FOMO is fear of missing out. JOMO is joy of missing out. And in many industries, we are told to always say yes, always say yes, always be interested, always be interested. And the truth is, we're not always interested in everything. We don't always want to do everything, but we're early in our careers, or we're trying to build expertise, or we're trying to grow our network. And very much what we advise in the book is people, you know, learning the workplace playbook, but at the same time, being as authentically themselves as possible. And so this concept of FOMO, fear of missing out, that's the saying yes. The JOMO, the joy of missing out, is actually having that deep conversation with yourself and saying, what would bring me joy? What are tasks on my plate that I can delegate that actually probably don't need to get done? Now, we're not naive. We know there are rules and there are responsibilities for every job and every position. But often there are things that you don't have to do, or things that maybe are like office housework, that are non-promotable tasks that somehow you find on your plate, but they're not on anybody else's plate. A concrete micro skill that I'll bring up that has played a role, and, you know, for me it was this jaw-dropping moment, an aha. I just finished my emergency medicine training, and I was applying for a position, and I went to one of my supervisors and asked if he would write a letter of recommendation. And he said, yeah, sure, no problem. And, you know, why don't you draft it and send me the draft? And in that moment, I became worried that he was asking me to do something illegal. I felt that he was being lazy. I thought he was, you know, in medicine we talk about scutting someone out, meaning having them do sort of the more menial work. And then I realized, actually, number one, this is a very common practice, just knowing talks about it and publicizes it, but it is very common in many industries to ask the person to draft their own letter of recommendation. And Adara and I took it to the next level. We actually wrote an article about this and talked about why it actually makes sense for people to draft their own letters of recommendation. Now, caveat, if it's illegal for that application process and it says you can't, then you definitely shouldn't. We're not saying break the rules. But you know you the best. I know me the best. Adara knows Adara the best. So, like, we're actually the perfect people to draft that first letter. We know our mm-hmm. bios. We know our concrete, you know, skills, the summer jobs we've held, et cetera. And we talk about that by having that draft ready or offering to your letter writer, can I write the first draft? Can I send you the draft? Or, wait, you know, I'm asking you, and here, by the way, here's the draft. You're taking work off their plate. With the ask, you're putting work on their plate, but with the draft, you're taking it back off a little bit, and they can really just polish it up and make it their own. And so that's a big concrete micro skill that is just useful, and we've had many people say that they are so glad to see it in writing, and they share mm-hmm. it with their mentees.
I love that. And, you know, that really makes a lot of sense. Do you also apply this to your personal lives?
Mm. Can you clarify the question?
Well, I mean, you've just talked about how you do this, how you are thinking about your professional life and how you've applied the micro skills. I guess I was just wondering, in a more personal level, like how it applies to your family or something like that.
I'll start and say that people have asked us, like, which skills are professional skills and which skills are personal skills. And
uh-huh.
in my experience, my opinion, there's a Venn diagram overlap. Many of these skills translate whether you're at home or at work, in the workplace, you know, with your colleagues or, you know, with your best friends or even with your close family members. So I think the whole concept of breaking things down into small fundamental building blocks ends up sort of taking over your whole life with how you live because it's just healthier. And, you know, fundamentally, Adair and I are doctors, and we are committed to our own health as well as the health of our teammates and ultimately delivering healthy work product. And mm-hmm. to that end, our chapter one is micro skills for self-care because we think, number one, industries don't emphasize it enough. They don't teach mm-hmm. it. They don't model it. They don't laud it. But also because we believe health has a broad definition. It's not just physical health. It is mental health. It is financial health. It is social health. It is civic health. It is many things. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to keep track of everything.
It is. If I didn't have a notepad, and I certainly don't live the lifestyle that you have, but I live my own lifestyle, and I live alone, and I can't just look over my shoulder and ask my husband to do something since he's no longer alive and isn't able to do that. So, you know, you have to have some organizational skills, I think, to do what I do and also do the social side of what I do and just, you know, live my life. So I certainly concur with what you guys are saying. Have either one of you found, and maybe we can ask you, Adara, have you ever found that micro skills have been hard to achieve?
Yeah, and it sort of relates to what you were just talking about. I think for early career professionals, which is really, you know, the one of the larger target audiences for this book, it's hard to set boundaries. And so when I was early in my career, I would have meetings, you know, late in the evening while also having young kids. And I would even, you know, sometimes meet with people on the weekend. Or mm-hmm. travel for work, for non-emergent, non-urgent work-related events on the weekend as well, and it just sort of started eating into my personal life. I think a little bit too much, and it became very hard to separate out when I'm supposed to be resting and when I'm supposed to be working. And so I think it took me a long time to feel comfortable figuring out that I probably should not be meeting as much on the, you know, evening times when I'm with my family,
uh-huh.
during the evening times with my family, or even on the weekends. And so I started to make an initial boundary of not meeting between like 6 to 9, which is like when I have young kids. I have a 3-year-old, 5-year-old, and a 7-year-old. But when they were even younger than that,
yes.
It was really challenging when they were like 2 and 1. They're just like much harder. And it was really hard to like balance a meeting when you have, you know, a 1-year-old and an infant on your lap. And so I started to say, when my kids are home, I won't have any meetings. And that wasn't because, you know, my supervisor told me to do that or a mentor told me to do that. It was really just me getting to that boiling point where I said, this isn't working. It would have been nice, though, if someone had said to me, like we do in this book, you know, I set these boundaries and actually nothing happened to my job. I was still able to focus on, you know, the mandatory work. I was able to even do the optional work that brought me joy. But all these things that really took away from me that weren't really even mandatory can go. And I'll be fine. And the truth is that I felt like I was even more productive because I was able to rest and, you know, just enter into the next business day more focused because the night before wasn't so stressful and hectic.
That makes sense to me. What about you, Risa? What have you found the hardest to achieve?
I think that it has changed over time. And also, I think there's one that is always going to be a work in progress because I'm just pretty committed to having it go better. And that's navigating conflict. And this is one we get asked a lot about. Compared to some of the other skills that a lot of people learn and get under their belt, maybe early career, one that rises again and again for the mid-career is navigating conflict. Because I think all of us in our workplaces have witnessed definitely conflict because the numbers, like huge number of hours per week are dealt with dealing with conflict at work, no matter your industry. Many of us have witnessed conflict not dealt with well. Many supervisors hope it just goes away. They hope the person will go away. And I think there's an element of human nature to avoid conflict. So I think that working on having difficult conversations, working on identifying colleagues that are demonstrating behavior at work that is perhaps not professional or not ethical, and therefore it's affecting the morale of the team or the department, I just think that's exquisitely important. And Adair and I in the book talk about psychological safety. And again, I'm going to reference back to being emergency doctors. One of the worst feelings is when you feel like you're not safe to be able to provide patient care, or when you witness a patient being verbally or physically abusive towards a team member such as a nurse. And we see these things. So we're exquisitely attuned to what happens when we're in workplaces where there isn't that psychological safety.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've never been in your shoes. So I would think that if somebody was in the emergency room, what they want is help. They want to survive. That's precisely what happened to my husband. He was rushed to the emergency room from the Staples Center, which is a stadium that we were at to watch a basketball game. And I had no idea what was happening to him, except that unfortunately he was dying and I didn't even know what that looked like or what that meant. But when the emergency room doctor came out and tried to bring me up to date with what was going on with my husband, we had been out for breakfast, you know, everything was going normal, and then suddenly his chin is to his chest, he's gurgling, and I'm going, what the heck is going on here? What is he doing? Well, he was dying, and this was back in 2009, and I know that things differ from state to state, and I'm sorry to digress just for a moment, but it feels like it's part of what we're speaking about because the emergency room doctor was so kind to me and probably did something ultimately that he probably wasn't supposed to do, but I was so grateful because I asked him, what's going on? I mean, you know, he said, well, we're doing our best to regulate his life, to regulate his heart, I'm sorry. And honestly, you guys, this is what I said immediately. I am alone. I am by myself. and I immediately said to this doctor, can he breathe on his own? And he said, no. I said, unplug him. He's not going to want to survive this. And they did. And as it turned out, and maybe you've heard of this before, he didn't have a heart attack. That was so wonderful to hear the diagnosis of his passing. The coroner said he died of sudden cardiac arrest. And you're probably familiar with that, but for those that are listening, it doesn't start in the heart. Think of your body like a dimmer switch. It starts in the brain, and it slowly just closes your body down. He never saw it coming. He didn't suffer. There was no pain. He was just alive, and then he wasn't. Have you ever had an experience like that before?
No, but thank you so much for, sharing. I mean, I think what I love hearing is that you got the closure by understanding sort of how he passed in a way that didn't feel like it was painful or traumatic to his body. And that sounds like that was very meaningful to you. Of course, we see
Absolutely.
People dying very regularly at work. I have not personally had anyone very close to me have a sudden unexpected death like that. But but I can imagine how shocking that was to you. You know,
it was.
We talk a lot about self-care, and I feel like it's really hard to learn how to manage these sort of major life events that can happen to us while we're working. And I don't know if you were working when this happened or if you were retired at that time.
I was just a stay-at-home mom. Yeah. Mm. So.
Well, that still works for me.
We all, you know what, what's your story is at the conversations plus connections equals community. What's your story? That is the tagline of what I do every week. And I believe that we do have connections. I do believe that we all have stories. And you mentioned something, Adara, because I don't know who was just speaking to me. Just because I'm not looking at you. So this question is actually directed to you, Adara. How do you apply these skills that you've been talking about in your book to self-care?
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to – so I'll just back up a bit and say we wanted to make this framework within the book that start off with taking care of yourself. And after you're able to do that, you can take care of the team. And after you're able to do that, you can take care of the work. And, you know, two physicians writing the book, we see a lot of the extremes of life that can happen at a flash, similar to the story you just shared with your husband, that are very unexpected for folks. And sometimes it's less sudden, and but it still has a very severe impact. And it can be related to your mental health, your social health, your financial health, but we see sort of a whole spectrum of challenge that people can have when it comes to just managing themselves. And we really wanted to bring that front and center to a book about just being better at work, because we think it's very important for people to focus on who they are as individuals, how much they care for themselves, and how they're able to function as an individual in the workplace. And we feel like this is a very holistic approach, because we're not really trying to teach the reader like how to make more money for your job. That's not the goal. The goal is really for the reader to feel like they themselves are becoming better at this whole management of, you know, life and personal needs and work and the supervisor expects of them. Like, there's an individual between all of this. And so we start the book with micro skills for self-care. And, you know, the first micro skill is nourish relationships with people you trust. And I think, you know, in times of great challenge, I think we call upon people we love, people we rely on, people we feel safe with. And I think that is like such a fundamental to building a career and navigating one's career that we felt like we should consider it as a skill set in itself. And that as you are meeting people, you're thinking about, how am I helping this relationship? How am I making this relationship stronger and healthier? And that helps you so that when these times do arise, it feels more comfortable and natural to reach out to someone. for support, for guidance, and you know, help with navigating whatever challenge might be in front of you.
Right. It's funny, like I said, I'm a definition person, and when I think about self-care and I apply that to myself, one of the things that I do for self-care is I take a yoga class every week. And it's not mm-hmm. just so that I can, you know, get into a downward facing dog or sun salutation. I mean, those movements are important. I don't want to discount that. But what's more important to me, why I take that yoga class, is to practice my breathing. Because I think when any of us get anxious and those shoulders come up and they're looking like earrings, they're supposed to be down. You need to lower those shoulders. You need to know how to take a deep breath and exhale. And I think that that's an important part of self-care for me. Would you guys agree with that?
100%. I mean, it sounds like you know the value. Everyone has a different, you know, value to these experiences, and you know what
sure.
value it brings to you. And so I think that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's remarkable. And I applaud you for understanding, like, this is
Thank
not
you.
Because I'm trying to build muscle. It's because I'm trying, I mean, which is a byproduct of doing yoga, I'm sure. But I'm doing
sure.
it because I want to have better understanding and control over my emotions, over my breathing. I mean, I think that's wonderful to have that insight.
A photographer could say the same thing. You know, nothing makes me happier than to be outside taking a picture of a pelican flying across the bay. You know, everybody has to decide for themselves what their self-care is. I have found, just from doing these podcasts and just based on my lifestyle, there are people that really don't understand or even consider self-care a priority in their lives. And I think that that's, you know, that's unfortunate. But, you know, that's just my opinion on that.
No, you know, we couldn't agree with you more. And in fact, going back to how we designed the book, it's 10 chapters. And that mm-hmm. chapter one is micro skills for self-care, because we believe everything starts with the self, and from the self and the
mm-hmm.
team, from the team, the work product. Now, these aren't isolated things. Everything's happening at the same time. But the more people can make sure they're good with themselves, they're taking care of themselves, the better they're going to be able to show up to work. And what you
right.
described is something that we highlight, which is micro skills for deliberate rest. And this concept of deliberate
mm-hmm.
rest, it may not be a phrase that everybody's heard of, but sure, it is sleeping, and sleep is very important. But also, it is ways that we sort of, I'll say, unplug. You know, it
mm-hmm.
absolutely can be yoga, meditation, breathing, walking in nature, taking a nap, exercising,
mm-hmm.
reading a book for pleasure, not a book that you have to do for work. And, you know, somehow enjoying cultural activities or sharing a meal with loved ones. You know, all these things are ways
right.
to deliberately rest, and that those are, number one, good for your health, but also then circling back to sort of helping people navigate the workplace better, they make people better at their deliberate practice, and in this case, that's their work.
I agree. So Risa, when we're talking about careers, why do you think it's important for people to brainstorm their expertise they'd like to develop?
This is such a fun micro skill and a fun question. So I think, you know, when people read that one, they're like, what does that mean? Or what do you mean brainstorm? And I think, you know, we only know that to which we've been exposed. And, you
True.
Know, often that is what we saw in the home, or it's what we saw in the community. That Adair and I very intentionally wrote this concept of access and belonging in the workplace, intentionally thread throughout the text, not just into an isolated section of the book. You only know what you have been exposed to, or what you've seen, or also what people have told you is available to you. And we want people to know that we want all of this available to them. We want this book to be available to them, the resources, the knowledge, the learning. And
mm-hmm.
so back to the brainstorming, you know, sometimes you don't even know where you're going. You don't know what expertise you wish to develop. So it really does take an exercise of thinking outside of the box, thinking big, thinking bizarre, thinking all up, way down, you know, inside, outside. And that after creating this exquisitely long, wide, anything goes list, then you can start paring things down to truly what interests you, truly mm-hmm. what will bring you joy if you're doing that on a daily basis. And the brainstorming is really also to expose gaps in your knowledge, to, you know, expose the places where you're missing something. Sort of, if you think about the Swiss cheese effect, the holes in your Swiss cheese, you know mm-hmm. what your strengths are, you know what skills you have, but what about the ones you don't have? What about the expertise you'd like to develop? And, you know, it's just sort of a healthy learning expertise exploring exercise.
Yeah, I would agree. Vera, I would like to ask you about what you think is the importance of feedback in the workplace. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think we're hoping that, or we're assuming, hoping mm-hmm. that our reader has a growth mindset, or if they do not yet have a growth mindset, they're interested in gaining one. And part of that requires one to be able to both solicit feedback and also to receive feedback, spontaneous feedback, for instance. And feedback is a very important tool that most people can just assume to be true, that is there to help the recipient improve with whatever issue is at hand. Now, that's obviously assuming it was delivered kindly and it was full of objective, measurable mm-hmm. content related to it, right? Like things that actually one can improve upon is centered within that feedback. I think the hardest part for many
yeah.
people is they take it, sometimes you can take it personally. Sometimes the feedback can be delivered in a way that is hard to really decipher how I'm able to approve upon this issue, because it's perhaps too subjective, too vague. There really isn't any specificity. Sometimes feedback is delivered in proper timing, so maybe it's not in the right medium, or maybe not the right person delivering. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why it can break down. And I think all of that leads to the fact that it's challenging. I mean, one of my jobs is to be an advisor for medical students, I have to deliver feedback quite often. And it's very easy if the feedback is like, I need you to show up on time because there have been 7 instances where you have been late and that has affected your team. Like, you know, it is a very clear, specific thing. There's measurable trends here, like you've done it multiple times, and then there's also like visible impact. It's affecting your team being productive because they need you there. And so,
right,
you know, and lastly, it's something that can be easily changed, right? Like it's something that can be fixed. So that's like the ideal. But of course, there's feedback out there that feels very personal, feels targeted to maybe your gender or your race or your height, your age. And those are things that, you know, are harder to change, right? Impossible
right.
to change. And so
right.
then it becomes like, what do I do with this feedback? And so I think that's why I wanted to include feedback in the book, because we know from firsthand experience, being someone who has delivered and received feedback, just how challenging
sure.
it is, but that with practice, one can develop the skill.
I would agree. So, Risa, let me ask you this. What do you recommend are skills necessary to have a polished communication in the workplace? What would you recommend?
For listeners that haven't taken a look at our book yet, we do have a chapter, and it's called Micro Skills for Polished Communication. And in that, we break it down into a wide definition of what is communication. We talk about body language. We talk about email, we talk about mm-hmm. spoken language, and I think I'll focus on email because a lot of people, we all are exquisitely skilled in email, or so we think.
Mm-hmm.
And what Adair and I talk about, what Adair and I talk about is just how we can do better. And we wrote a article that then got incorporated into the book, talking about a compassionate email culture. Many of us focus on inbox zero, and we're thinking about our own email inbox. But what if you flip it 180 mm-hmm. and think about the other people or person's email inbox, like your teammates? And so mm-hmm. we talk about, you know, when to send emails, that really there's probably no reason to have to send outside of working hours. Now, it doesn't mean you can't draft it, write it, even mm-hmm. schedule it to send, but there's no need to send it outside of work hours. And if there is something that emergent, then maybe email is not the best mode of communication. Back to the whole concept of email, we do a deep dive into talking about BCC, the blind carbon copy, and
right.
what a useful tool that's actually often misused. It's often used for nefarious reasons. And we really think that it can be very respectful and positive and a very nice thing to employ. For example, you've never met Adara before. You want me to introduce you so I can send an email to Adara, having gotten your permission, saying, "Dear Adara, please meet so-and-so." And then when you reply, you say, "Thank you so much, Risa, placed in BCC." So Adara knows that I'm seeing the message, but I'm no longer going to be included on the email thread.
Yep.
Another good way to use the BCC is everybody's coming to the holiday party, and maybe there's going to be a like a silent auction. So you need to know what everybody's going to donate for the silent auction, rather than putting it into the to or the CC line where all replies go to everybody. You can put in BCC all the people that are invited to attend the holiday party, and then the response doesn't go to everybody. It just goes to the sender. So we talk
yep.
about tools like that to really make emailing a more polished means of communication.
I'm sorry to just keep going back and forth with you guys and bringing this back to me, but I'm doing what you just said right as we're – not right as we're speaking, because I'm speaking with you, but I'm that person that does the class reunions, and yeah. and what I do is I respect people's privacies. So if I'm going to send out an email about the plans, the costs, all the details having to do this reunion, I don't put 10 emails on the to line. I put them all on the BCC line, because maybe Joe doesn't want Susie to have his email address. And so it's a respectful way of getting this out. Like you said, it's not sneaky. I'm being considerate, but at the same time, I'm also making it a little bit easier than writing 45,000 emails if I can, you know, make it less and still manage to get the information across. And I just figure that people just know that automatically, but I think it's important that that's just one more of your fabulous micro skills that you remind people, because maybe somebody hadn't thought about that before, whether it's personal, like a reunion, or it's work-related, where maybe you just don't want everybody to know who's being included in this correspondence. So I really have a lot of respect for that, and I incorporate that. But Adara, in the conclusion of your book, you have something called the three truths, and I would love for you to share what those are with our listeners.
Of course. So we want to actually, we open the book and close the book with these three truths, and we feel like they're just guiding principles that we want people to consider as they are reading this book. And the first is that time can only be spent. We recognize that we're all busy. We have multiple competing demands. I know I sure do. And we are mm-hmm. trying our best to balance all the things in front of us. And while we're doing that, you know, the clock is moving, right? We're aging, days are passing, and And we need to be thoughtful of how we're spending the time that we do have. And so we wanted to open the book with the idea of just recognizing that we value the reader's time. In fact, we value the reader's time so much that we really tried to write a book that was like full of just actionable content and way less filler, you know, irrelevant stories. And we really wanted to be thoughtful of the reader's time. The second truth is that the world is not equal. And, you know, as an advisor, I've been an assistant residency director. I've led various mentorship programs here in Boston, even one at the national level. And I've known that people who come into any place, a workplace, a program, a class, whatever it be, whatever it may be, will have a different perspective, a different level of skills, a different pedigree, different generational wealth, if any. And so all these things will affect someone's perspective and experience when it comes to navigating the workplace. So we just wanted to make it sure, make it clear to the reader that we know everyone reading this book is going to be at a different stage, different skill sets, different background, and we recognize that. And then the third is that learning is limitless if it's accessible. I believe most of us will be able to be a better version of ourselves if we sort of find the knowledge, the information, the content to get us there. That information, that education needs to be accessible, though. And I think the reason why we really wanted to write this book was because Reese and I have both independently and together have found that sometimes there's a motivated person who wants to do better, but yet it's not clear to them how. And just by sharing information, they can move in that better direction for themselves.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, I think the willingness, I'm a word person. I think willingness is an important part of this, because without that, you know, you're not going to move forward. And not everybody, this sounds judgmental. I mean, not everybody necessarily wants to move forward. But depending upon where you are in your career or even where you are within your family life, you know, you have to, in my opinion, you have to at least be willing to be adaptable and to consider. And I don't know, do either one of you journal? Are you journal writers?
Not in the traditional sense, but I have like a digital pad that I constantly will take notes in.
Okay. And who was that saying that? Was that Risa or Adara?
Me, that was Adara, sorry.
Okay, what about you, Risa? Do you journal or take notes or anything like that?
I do. As part of my morning ritual, I didn't always do this, but I've come to do a daily morning sort of writing exercise that's similar to a yoga type of practice to really just sort of set the day and outline things.
That's really great. So you've written your first book, and I'm just wondering about anything that's down the road for you guys. What's next? Do you see a book two coming out in the future?
Well, book one
I'll
just
start.
Dropped.
Oh.
Okay.
No, because we love this question, and part of it is because we're both, our minds are always going. Our bodies are always going too, but our minds are always going. So, and as Adara just shared, like, we feel like we're trying to really be in the present, enjoy the moment. Like, we're still launching. And although our launch date has passed, we're still in the period of launch. And so there's still lots of great activities coming with that. I do think for each of us, we have books in mind, sort of interests or, you know, things that sort of nag at us. And I'll just speak personally, things that nag that I think, you know, writing them and getting them out into the world, they'll help people. They'll help people in the workplace. So I have some things in mind for that. And as you know, I'm a podcaster, so I'm really planning to continue to grow the podcast and do stuff in the healthcare space.
I think that's great. And how often do you podcast?
I drop an episode every week.
Okay. So you have a guest that joins you every week. That's really good to know, because there's a lot, you know, you don't know what you don't know. My husband always would say it is what it is. That's the engineer in him. That's how he lived his life. It is what it is. And I would say, yeah, but, and he would say, no, it is what it is, period. Adapt. I sort of come from the position of you don't know what you don't know, because that to me is also a truth. You know, if you don't know, well, then you have two options. You can stay in that moment of not knowing and being okay, or you can decide, I think I'd like to know more, and then move forward that way. So I can see where, I there's only so many hours in the day. There has to be a time for both of you where you just say, I'm done, and you're done. And maybe a thought does generate in your mind, and maybe that's when you just go to your notes and just make yourself a note and remind yourself about doing that later. But to be in balance, I think, is so important regardless of anything that you do. Would you agree? Either one of you could answer that if you'd like.
100%.
Hello.
I mean, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll tell you, since I just mentioned the word balance, I understand that you're both on the East Coast, and you both have some responsibilities almost immediately when our podcast is over. So do you have any closing things you'd like to say before we say goodbye?
I'll just start and say I want to hear. I know Adara has things that are coming up for her that she's looking forward to in addition to our current launch. So I want to make sure to give her time to say that. But I'll just say that, regarding the book, we're so appreciative of your reception and giving us the time to talk about the book. We really believe it's an excellent book for graduation. Mm-hmm. It's great for people that are going into college, starting their first job, going into graduate school, or going through any transition professionally. It's mm-hmm. a very readable text, and Adara and I share our own stories of how we learned these micro skills. We don't have it at all, perfectly done, and we come from a place of sharing of where we messed up or where we failed or even where we succeeded. But these are real stories that we share in the book as illustration of the micro skills.
I think that's great. Did you want to add to that, Adara?
Yes, and I'm sorry, I think I was speaking and maybe you weren't able to hear me for that last question. But I'll close and say, yes, thank you so much for having us. And we really do hope that people can see the value of this book and how we really just wanted to share information that we personally didn't feel like we had. And so if folks do go out and buy the book, read the book, listen to the book, we are happy to hear from you. We're on all the socials. We have personal websites. You can reach out to us and give us feedback. You can leave reviews on Amazon or Goodreads or wherever you buy the book. But we really just hope to hear from folks. We hope that it helps people and makes me feel supported in some way.
Well, I think that's great. And just one last, because I'm trying to write my notes down. If people want to listen to the podcast, tell me one more time, what is the actual name of the podcast?
Thanks for that. The podcast is called The Visible Voices, and it's on Apple, Google, Spotify, and anywhere where you listen to podcasts.
Perfect.
Also on YouTube.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, ladies, I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank our good friend Lisa for connecting me with the two of you. And I'm going to let you go on with the rest of your evening. And I just want to say thank you so very much for sharing your stories with our listeners today. I've really, really enjoyed it. Enjoy the rest of your evening, ladies.
Thank you.
You so much
too.
For having us.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Ever felt unsafe in your rideshare? We all seem to have a rideshare horror story. I'm Will Coleman, CEO of Alto, the world's safest and most consistent ride experience. Stop riding with strangers and start riding with professionally trained employee drivers who aren't in a rush and will never leave you behind. Expect a company-owned SUV that's cleaned and safety checked daily. Your first ride is free with code TRYALTO. Download the Alto app or visit ridealto.com/radio to learn more.
MODO.US.
Visit MODO.US for the best free play social casino experience wherever you are. MODO offers a huge selection of Vegas-style games with free spins, exciting promotions, and always generous jackpots. You can waste your time with the others, or you can win at MODO. Register today at MODO.US for your free welcome bonus.
MODO is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
MODO.US.